quantum gravity seminar. Today I will be chairing since Alessia is traveling. And today as our speaker, we have Ana Alonso Serrano from the Albert Einstein Institute. And Ana will talk about the Time Traveler's Guide to Quantum Field Theory. And Ana is fine to have questions during the talk. So whenever you have a question, please put a comment in the chat or put your question in the chat or raise your virtual hand and I will let Ana know. And with this, I'm very looking forward to your talk and you can just start, Ana.
Okay, thank you for the invitation to give a talk. This is about a recent paper that we have published with my collaborators, with Erison Toya, Luis Garay, and Eduardo Martín Martínez. And I will first explain you the motivation of this work and this project, because it's not a finished project. We have more things in mind. So the first idea that we had was like dealing with time machines and taking what some issues of these space times. And the idea we had was like constructing the time machine using.
Ana, yeah, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, I will let you know as. Okay. Yeah. Sorry for the interruption.
Okay, so sorry for the technical problems. So then our idea was to study time machines, and in order to study time machines, we have decided to construct them using traversable wormholes. So the point is that. Okay, so there are like different proposals once you have a traversable wormhole to construct a time machine. And the different ways to do it imply that you have a time machine during the whole story, or you have the time machine created in some moment, you have future Cauchy horizon, past Cauchy horizon, both, or no Cauchy horizon. So there are like different ways to create them, but more or less the characteristics that we are going to study are similar. And all the time machines, as I said, are like characterized because of the system of closed time-like curves. That means that there is some world line of material that is describing a loop and going in a closed loop. And another aspect of this is that it was studied several years ago also, that in the moment that you have wormholes with surrounding matter, it's inevitable that they turn into a time machine. So it's something that is worth to study the characteristics. And another, sorry, characteristics of these time machines is that in general, they present Cauchy horizons. I said in general, because there are very specific constructions where you have not Cauchy horizons, but in general, you have them. And in fact, their stability have been studied in order to study the stability of the time machine. And it's something I will mention during the talk as well. So the other part of our motivation is that the quantum field theory of these space times is not easy to study because these space times, the geometry is multiply connected. That means like a closed loop is not closing to a point. So you cannot easily define a quantum field theory there, and you have to work to the universal covering space in order to define it. But we also thought that could be interesting in the study because of the appearance in some geometries, in some that have, for example, some periodic boundary conditions, the appearance of zero modes. And these zero modes can be removed by hand, but they can that can give problems to the theory, or you can add a regulator. But these regulators are mostly added ad hoc. So our idea was like, if we can look for a family of quantum field theories, that can serve as a regulator for the zero mode in certain limit. So this was the motivation for this work. And then what I'm going to try to explain you here is first to spend some time describing the geometry of the wormholes and time machines that we have constructed, and mainly doing the comparison with the Einstein cylinder that is our other object of study as a limit of the time machine. So I will describe the geometry of both space-time, and I will present as well the canonical time machine model, that is a simplified version of the time machine, that is we don't lose generalization of the problem and it simplifies a lot of the study. And also I will present the construction of the Penrose diagram to have some visualization of the space-time. Once we have the geometry, describe it, I will...
Sorry, Anna, there's a question by Lee, I see.
Yes, okay. I don't see your motivation, but I wonder if you thought about an idea that came from John Wheeler a long time ago, which is that when you have a wormhole and also the electromagnetic field or some other long-range field, you have charged particles at the mouths of the wormhole. So there's a kind of dual description either in terms of the geometry of the wormhole and the sourceless radiation field or fermions and anti-fermions. Having a
Can you repeat? That was which model? It was a model studied by Novikov?
It's a very general idea, and it should occur in most models where they're generatively coupled to long-range gauge fields like electromagnetism, which is that you can have flux of gauge fields go through the wormhole, and then the wormhole appears. There's an effect of low energy description in which the two mouths of the wormhole are fermion and antifermion, each charged. And that seems unavoidable if you just think in terms of effective field theory and low energy physics. Because electric flux can be caught inside the wormhole.
Okay. So what's the I didn't understand. So what's the point with the part of our model that you were seeing that in that case the quantum field theory can be perfectly constructed?
Well, the point is that there's a generic occurrence when you have quantum field theories and wormholes. So I was wondering if you dealt with this. There's been many, many treatments of it by many, you know, many different ways by many people, but it was seemed not to be thinking about it.
No, we have, I mean, the construction that we do of the geometry is a general one. We are not dealing with that particular problems, and the matter that we have introduced is a massless scalar field in this case for simplicity. So I think it's not dealing with that problem, although I can think later about it.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay, so then I will construct the quantum field theory in this space-time, and then I will focus on computing the vacuum two-point function that are interested for our study and the renormalized stress energy tensor. And I will finish with some discussions on future perspective of the work. So first, let me describe the geometry. So we are going to focus in the very simple case of a 1+1 time machine that will be constructed for a 1+1 wormhole. And this is because of the simplicity of the model that allows us to use analytically all the techniques. but this all this study could be extended to a higher dimensions. So then what we do is to take a 1+1 dimensional asymptotically flat space-time with a wormhole. And then what we do is topologically identify the opposite ends of a strip in this 1+1 case. So when you do that and you just identify the opposite end on the of the strips, what you get is the Einstein cylinder. But if that, those endpoints are identified at different times, is the case of a time machine. So this is a general idea of the construction to have in mind. And now I will explain in detail how to construct this structure and how to obtain the Einstein cylinder as a limit of the time machine. So let me start with the most general, globally static, simply connected 1+1 space-time that I will call M for the rest of the talk. So this is the structure. I don't know if you see my pointer. Yeah. Okay. So it's given in terms of some parameter alpha that is space dependent, and then that in order to work here, we will consider it as positive without loss of generality. And let me express it as this exponential. And I will explain a little bit why, but it's, here it's just for convenience. So this space-time possess a unique global time-like Killing vector field. And as I said, it's simply connected. And here is when I want to do some remark for the technical part that I will try not to discuss here to not over charge the talk, but the definition that you do in terms of the Killing vector fields, it's analogous to define it in terms of some Killing observers, and you define the four velocity and the four acceleration. And in that case, the parameter of the four acceleration will be this A appearing here. And I said this because it's interesting in order to understand the features of the time machine if you are interested into going the details, but it's not important to understand or follow the general thing of the talk. It was just a side comment. So then to construct a time machine that I will call a bar M, we need to identify the points in M. And there will be two positive constants implied in that, that are this A that will be greater than one or equal to one, and Q. And I will explain you now what are these parameters. So what we do is that we establish the following equivalence relation between the T and X. And in this way, the of T prime over T equal A, and the difference of X equal Q in M. So this, what you can see is that then Q is the length distance between the mouths of the wormhole. So, or in the case of the Einstein cylinder wires, is the length of the cylinder. So that's the meaning of the parameter Q. And what it says, so A is going to give us the shift, the time shift in the identification we are doing. So in some sense is relating the strength of the time machine, is what we call the warp parameter. So with this equivalence relation, the metric must be also identified. And in this way, if you remember the parameter, the function alpha, takes this, is equal on the identification points on the end of the strips following this relation. So when we have the length parameter here, Q, and then we need to multiply for the time shift. So the relevant parameter in this construction is going to be this warp parameter, because when this A is greater than one, it means that the identification is not made at equal times, as you see here. And then is when the time machine is created and there will be CTCs. In this case, in this particular creation of a time machine from workers, there will be both future and past Coetzee horizons, as I will show later for more clarification in the Penrose diagram. And in the limit that A tends to one, we recover the Warhol model, that in this case is the Einstein cylinder, because we have this identification in the ends of the strip via this length Q, but it's identified at the same time. So what I want to make clear here, the time machine that we have created, this M bar, is multiply connected. And the first space-time I started with M is simply connected. And in fact, this M is the universal cover of M bar. So I want to have this clarified because I will be all the time passing from M bar to M in order to calculate the quantum field theory. As just also as a side comment, as I said before, this M bar has local vector, Killing vector for each of the simply connected regions. So it's locally static, but it has not a global Killing vector. But if you study the Killing observers that I mentioned before, those one can be extended globally and in fact allows you to allows us to understand better the strength of the time machines in terms of parameter A and how is the circulation through the Warhol and everything. But this as a side comment. Okay, so then let me, there is some raised hand, you see?
Yeah, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi. So hi. I'm a bit confused, like, doesn't this identification simply give you, instead of space-time, instead of a spatial slice being a line, it's a circle, right?
What, sorry?
On the previous slide.
Yeah.
The ident, or maybe the one before that, the identification A plus Q, alpha AX plus Q to alpha of X, that basically just turns the space-time into a circle if A is one. I don't see why that's a wormhole. It's simply a cylinder, a circle moving forward in time, isn't it?
Yeah, in this case, the wormhole, as we are in just one direction, is the Einstein cylinder. So yeah, it's a circle.
But yeah, there's no wormhole per se. It's just a closed spatial slice.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point that the in 1+1 dimension, the version of a Warhol you have is in fact that circle. But this identification, when you do it in higher dimensions, and then you have the possibility of entering into the Warhol or no, is clearly the Warhol.
No, but Robert is asking if it is I'm not sure this was a communication. Robert is asking if it is a space-like circle evolving in time. The answer is not. Yes, it's no.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking, and I think that's what it is if A is one. There's no wormhole per se. I wouldn't call it a wormhole. That's right.
But there's a definition T also. It's a temporal line. Time-like. The question is whether the circle is a space-like or a time-like line?
Yeah, the circle is a space is time like, so you
right. So Robert is asking if it is space like.
No.
Does this clarify, Robert, a bit, maybe? Okay.
So the point is that as you have only one dimension, you go around. But in the moment that you introduce the parameter A, you introduce also a time shift there. That means that you have the time machine. Okay, if not, we can talk later. Okay, so then So the particular simple model that I, it's something that is called the canonical time machine, and it's just simply, if you remember here, this alpha that I introduced in terms of this A that I said that is related with a acceleration parameter, I'm going to make it a constant for simplicity. So I make this A constant and equal to the logarithm of A of the warp parameter, and L. L here is the length parameter of the identification of the space, and I call it L instead of Q because L is going to be given in terms of some integral over Q and A on the general case, so to mark the difference. And in this particular simple case of 1 plus 1, any metric is conformal to that, so we don't lose any generality, but we simplify a lot the computation. So the metric that we are going to work with is this one, with W given by this fraction. And it's in this metric when it's easy also to find some trajectory that represent a closed time-like curve, very simple one, and then you see that it's a time machine. And also see that when A tends to 1, this W tends to 0, and the metric is flat, and then what you recover is the Einstein cylinder. So this is the simple scheme I'm going to work with. So is it clear?
Just a question, there's no translation parameter here now?
Yeah, is this L, the previous Q? You mean the the length of the circle is this L of the distance?
Okay, I thought you had to demand that your function is no, it's quasi-periodic, that's what you're saying. So if I translate Y by L, it's quasi-periodic. So there's really only one parameter in that model, right?
A and L. In fact, right? It's a family of univariometric models, yes.
But in general, they would be independent, or are you saying it's characteristic that there's only one parameter, the ratio of the scale with the length?
Sorry, I think I have very bad sound.
That there is only one physical parameter, which is the ratio of the log of the scale by the length.
Yeah. And so, in fact, we keep L constant, so the parameter that we are using is A.
Sorry, can I ask? I'm having trouble seeing still where the time identification comes in. If I look at this, this is just a de Sitter space or anti-de Sitter, depending on what the sign of W is, isn't it? Why is this a time machine?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to explain later that in fact it's locally symmetric to an ADS2.
Yeah.
Exactly. But in the moment that this A is greater than 1 is when you have the CTCs, where in the case of ADS2 you have not. I hope it will be clear in the purpose diagram, but it's
okay. Well,
the tricky part is in the logarithm of A.
Well, okay. Well, I'm still a bit confused because if I make W is just some constant, and that's proportional to the cosmological constant. If I compute the Ricci scalar, I'm just going to get a constant. So it's just a constant curvature space.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll let you go ahead, but it's not clear to me how this becomes a time machine, but go ahead.
Yeah. You're completely right. You have a constant curvature, and when you calculate the Ricci scalar, it's in terms of this W. And
I guess, Rob, what's happening is that if you move along a velocity curve, which has a velocity omega or W, whatever, in time, and then you close it back, right? Because there's some identification at some point you're doing on Y, or are you?
Well, you have to make some temporal identification.
You're doing some temporal quotient there.
Yeah, because you have to take into account that in this metric, you have this identification here on the time. So then you have some time shift in some moment.
But you don't have to do that identification. That's what I think Rob and me too, I'm confused. Why do you have to do that temporal identification?
I do it because I want the time machine there.
Okay.
That's my point. I don't know if it's like... Because the idea is like, okay, how I can construct a time machine that I have control on it. So this is the way I construct it. Okay, let me try to explain with the other, and if it's not clear, we can come back to it. So... So in order to make the comparison with this ADS2, as you said, because this M, the space-time without the identification, is the Poincaré path of the ADS2. So then I can change it directly to the Poincaré coordinates, and then you see exactly the form, as you already mentioned, of the metric. So it's clear the role of W. So then I can express this in the double null coordinates that are the ones that I'm going to use, this theta, over the rest of the talk. And then let me try to represent. So it's not part of the rho and tau because I made it to make a conformal diagram. But the point is that what you have before the identification, that is in M, is the Poincaré path of ADS2, and is given by this triangle here. And you have these both Cauchy horizons, and is beyond those Cauchy horizons where you can have CTCs, but this part is free of them. So that's the space-time M without the identification, and what means this ADS2. But in the moment that I make the identification with the time shift, what I have is that there are CTCs in these two triangles, and I have two extra Cauchy horizons here. And it's just the part where these both thetas are positive, where the space-time is free of CTCs. So that's the difference that is making the identification. So then I can, what I'm going to do is like to construct my quantum field theory in this Poincaré paths completely with the identification. So that means that are regions with CTCs. So in order to do that, I will compare with the universal covering that is the standard M, the Poincaré paths where these two regions have no CTCs because it's the standard ADS2. I don't know if now it's a little bit clearer, the point. Okay. So then this is the part of the geometry. So to make it clear, this is the path that we are going to use to construct our quantum field theory. And this is this diamond-shaped region is the one that is free of CTCs and that can be used to compare to the Einstein cylinder. So let me describe the quantum field theory. For that, I'm going to give a brief review of the quantum field theory in the Einstein cylinder that we will compare with, and then I go for the other part. So in the Einstein cylinder, we have this flat metric with simply this topological identification, as you see at the same times. And as you know, the field operator can be decomposed in a zero-mode component and an oscillatory part, and with the oscillatory part given by this standard form, and expressing the zero mode in terms of position and momentum operators. So this is the case of the Einstein cylinder. And now what we construct in the case of the time machine model. So I will express the time machine model in the theta coordinates, the W coordinates, the Klein coordinate equation takes this simple expression. And we impose some Dirichlet boundary conditions on the borders. And as I mentioned, we have to construct the quantum field theory defining the universal coordinate space, and then define the transformations to go to the m-bar spacetime. So in the case of the universal covering, the solution can be written in this way with A, the annihilation and creation that will be promoted to annihilation and creation operators, and the modes expressed in this way in terms of the theta plus and minus coordinates. I will express, as I mentioned also here with the bar, the spaces that are multiply connected with the bar, the fields defined in the spaces simply connected without it. So in order to obtain the corresponding QFT in M bar, in this case is in this case of 1+1 case, the simple metric that we have chosen is really simple, but it gets a little bit complicated when you try to generalize it. So in this case, in the double null coordinates, the topological identification is simply directly in terms of the parameter A. So then the fields in the adjoining part are equal, are given in terms of parameter A. So this just to mention the technical part, is known that the field has to be automorphic under the action of the fundamental group. Well, that's the point that I said that here is very simple because it's only some condition of how it is transformed in terms of the parameter A, but it can get a little bit more complicated.
Sorry, isn't that a little bit too restrictive? A priori, all you need is that.
Sorry?
So is that identification a little bit too restrictive? Because you could have an identification up to an action of the global symmetry group of your theory, right? So nothing tells you that when you come back exactly to the same field. You can come back to the same field up to a translation or up to, you know, a phase or... So that's very restrictive. Usually...
In the case that you have many, simple many, and twisted you know, the, field.
There's many, many sectors that you have to consider when you do orbi folding like that. So the original theory splits into a collections of orbifold sectors.
Yeah, that's the case if you have twisted vector, but if you have untwisted vectors, you have a field, then you have not that problem. So we are considered that simple case.
Okay, but that's a restriction, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the full field theory should contain all possible solutions.
Yeah. That's completely right. I mean, there were some considerations on that, I think, in some paper of Frolov on the 90s. But in this case, as I said, in this first project that we have done, we are trying to have under control the most simple case that we can, and then understand it. And then, of course, you can start having more realistic cases.
Okay.
There's also a question by Robert.
Yeah, thanks. So here I see the identifications. This is a bit related to the previous question. It's common for such identifications to produce singularities, that there are fixed points. Is that the case here, or is this singularity free?
Singularity free.
Okay.
Okay. So then in this simple case, as I said, and as you have mentioned several times, we are having like the simplest case because all this structure of the topological identification and the how you define the orthomorphic fields and everything, it gets very complicated very fast. And so that's the reason we took the most simple cases to be able to do all the things analytically and be able to track the zero mode and understand it. And from now on is when we can start considering to introduce more complicated and realistic cases. So in this very simple case, in order to have the bar phi as an automorphic field, the annihilation variable has to just satisfy this simple relation. And that means that it has this form in terms of some arbitrary constant C that, okay, I'll tell it later. That this C will be the annihilation, will represent the annihilation a variable in the solutions in M, for the automorphic field. So this means that these are the solutions in the multiply connected space-time. So we have defined our quantum field theory in the universal covering, and because of the use of the automorphic fields, we can translate it using the discrete group of geometry via the fundamental group, in fact, to the solutions in M bar, in the multiply connected space-time, that is the space-time with the time machines. So then this is the form of the solutions with the normalized modes being given by these two expressions. In terms of, as you see, of always of parameter beta that is related with logarithm of A, W that is also related logarithm of A, and the variables, the null variables theta plus and minus, and this S plus and minus are the sign of the variables. So let me go back to remind that, as you see here, in the moment that both are positive, we are in the diamond region that is safe for having CTCs. So our solution is defined in the whole patch, but for the following computation of this particular project, we are going to restrict to the diamond safe regions where there is no CTC, and we do that in order to recover the Einstein cylinder and having the track of the zero mode. So from now on, I will have the computations only in that diamond. Sorry. So what are the compositions I'm going to develop here? I'm going to calculate the vacuum two-point function. And as I said, compare the Einstein cylinder where we have zero mode with the time machine model when there is no zero mode in the QFT. So the relevant quantum correlators that I'm going to have are the Wideman function and the anti-commutator and commutator, the Hammer and Pauli-Jordan functions that will give the Wideman function. So I will compute this Hadamard and Pauli-Jordan in the case. So let me briefly remind for comparison, how is the expression?
Sorry.
Yeah.
You haven't yet defined what you mean by the vacua there.
Sorry?
You haven't yet defined what you mean by the vacua.
Defined by the annihilation of the vacua.
There should be an ambiguity there in what you call the vacua, right?
Sorry?
Isn't there an ambiguity in what you call the vacua? There's not a unique vacua.
Sorry?
Is there a unique vacua? I would.
Yeah, in this case, yes.
What is this vacua?
You need the one that we are having the fog vacuum by the annihilation variable.
Well, what do you call the? It's the same thing. What, you know, there's an ambiguity in what you call the annihilation variable.
Why we have an ambiguity? I don't understand it.
So what is? Okay, what do you call the, you know, the annihilation variable?
This is. That we have here. So this is the point that, the A that I mentioned before are in the universal covering. And that's the, let's see, like some, follow the name, some space time that I use it to construct this, but it's not the one I'm going to work with. I'm going to work with this because I want to work with the one with CTCs.
Okay, so yeah, so you're saying there's no ambiguity in defining the split of the Hilbert space into positive frequency and negative frequency?
No, because
time-like curve that are periodic, or
yeah, there is no ambiguity because you work from the covering space where you have not. And then the way that the property that you use to go back to the multiply connected preserves that because it's via some transformation. That's the reason you use the covering, the universal covering.
So there's no ambiguity in the universal cover, you say?
No, in the universal covering you have
one time, like Hilbert vector, and
everything is developed there without any exotic thing, and then you transform it from the universal covering via the automorphic field to the multiply connected one. That's the trick to construct the quantum field theory here.
Okay.
Sorry, can I just ask something very similar to what Laurent was asking about? I can see that there's no ambiguity in the vacua in the universal cover, but when you do the identification, then wouldn't you be able to sort of like pump charge essentially into your field by using a diffeomorphism, like the diffeomorphism of S1, right? And you do that, you wind your field around the circle, and then you like the vacuum sort of like you move into a different zero mode state.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not zero mode, but like the topological sector.
Yeah, I think that I had the same question. Like the states are defined up to a phase. So I don't see how it's unique really when you quotient. And there should be, you know, I would have expected a moduli space of vacua. But, you know, I haven't done the analysis, but that seems surprising that there's no ambiguity.
Like in the universal cover, it's I can kind of see that.
Yeah, I understand your point. Like in the moment that you define this automorphicity to pass to the other, that you are introducing some ambiguity, you are asking.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and also the particular choice of your covering, right? Like it's defined up to homotopy by, you know, it's classified up to homotopy by the von Mertl group. So once you pick that, you sort of already determine what your winding is. And yeah, you can kind of see that, you can kind of say that, okay, now I have a vacuum, but then, you know, the same problem occurs where you can do a diffeomorphism in S1 and then you can, you know, change your winding essentially.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so. I have to, maybe we can discuss later with the things, but I think no, because in the...
What Angie is saying is that you should have the possibility to have some kind of Aronoff-Bohm phases that you...
Mm-hmm.
The possibility of, sorry?
Aronoff-Bohm phases that you introduce in the time identification. And this one should dress the vacua. That would be, you know, physically natural.
Okay, now I'm not.
So you're making a choice, let's say here. Now, yeah, okay.
Okay, in any case, I will think about it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so. So then I'm going to, here. So the computation of the Hadamard and the Pauli-Jordan functions in the Einstein cylinder are something known from before, and you can decompose it in the oscillatory modes. And then on the zero mode with as a ground state of a quantum harmonic oscillator, where this gamma is a dimensionless frequency parameter. I think that's all. Yeah, I think this is a case that is more or less known. So, and what happens in the time machine models? In the time machine model, the Hadamard function, this, I know this slide is very ugly, but I only wanted to express the, to put the general expressions, but I will now go to the cases that are more interest. I here keep for the case of generality, the S, the sign of the variables. So these functions are defined in the whole patch, but then we are interested once in the area of the diamond shaped, that is the one that is related with the Einstein cylinder and has no CTCs. And also we are interested in checking what happens with these functions when we take the limit A going to one, that is the limit that goes to the Einstein cylinder. So what we get in that case? So we express A as the sum one plus delta with delta going to zero. And doing some computations here, we finally see that the component C1 of the Hadamard goes directly to the expression of the oscillatory part of the Einstein cylinder. C2 goes to zero, and C0 goes to these expressions once we have set gamma in terms of delta. And this is precisely the zero mode of the Einstein cylinder with this frequency parameter. So then we see that the time machine that has no zero mode, when we go to the limit, then we get exactly the expression of the Einstein cylinder with a zero mode. And with the Pauli-Jordan function, that this is the ugly general expression, you have the same. Then you simplify this expression, like going only to the diamond and making A tending to one, that means to the Einstein cylinder. And then you get that in this limit is exactly this same zero mode that appears in the Einstein cylinder and the oscillatory part of the Einstein cylinder. So what is this telling us is that the zero mode is essential for the consistency of the underlying quantum field theory, and is not natural to remove it artificially, because it's emerging there as a limit of the time machine model. We can see this a little bit more into detail when we calculate the renormalized stress energy tensor. Here I wanted first to mention that this normalized stress energy tensor, when applied to the Cauchy horizon, has been used to study the quantum stability of the Cauchy horizon and then preventing to enter into the region with CTCs. This is something that we are not focused here, but I think it's interesting enough to mention, because here what we want to do is to track the emergence of this zero mode contribution of the renormalized stress energy tensor from the tensor on the time machine. So in the Einstein cylinder, the result is like you have this tensor for the oscillatory part and for the zero mode part in terms of the second moment of the momentum. Sorry. So the expression for the time machine in general is given in terms of this function that I described here. But as before, what we are interested here is in taking the limit when A goes to one to the Einstein cylinder. And then we get this expression, this part being exactly the oscillator, and knowing that the second moment is of P is going, it's gamma over two. So we see that this is also exactly the contribution of the zero mode. So then what this is telling us first is like when delta goes to zero, the zero mode of the time machine picks the eigenstate of P of the quantum mechanical free particle of with zero momentum eigenvalue. So it's this family of quantum field theories choosing the state for the zero mode in the case of the Einstein cylinder. So then what I put also here is that we can consider also the time machine model as a small deformation from the Einstein cylinder. So imagine you have this identification here, and then you allow for some small shift on the times, and you can consider that as a small deformation of the Einstein cylinder. So that is a small deformation, has no zero mode, but is fixing the zero mode in the limit. And in this sense, this provides a natural way to remove the zero mode ambiguity and fix the quantization on the Einstein cylinder. So here is just a brief reminder of what I have studied. We have studied the quantization of a massless scalar field in a space-time with a time machine in a particular case of 1 plus 1. Space-time, so in a very particular case. And we have proposed a way to resolve the ambiguity of the zero mode quantization in the QFT for this space-time with spatial periodicity. So it's giving us, directly, as I wrote there, a prescription for the zero mode quantization. So this is the first result. And of course, as I said, there are like few steps now. The work in progress that we are doing is the introduction of our ungrouped weak detector in the time machine model with the consideration of the Einstein cylinder, the small deformation and the time machine to see how that changes and how it's sensitive the detector to that topology changes. And of course, it's opened the way of going to some more general cases to see what happens. And for example, in that case, you can allow for the starting for the flat case and then join to the a dynamical situation when the time machine is created to see what happens. And so different options and ideas open. So I think this is more or less all. So thank you for your attention.
Okay, let's all thank Anna for her very nice talk. And we still have time for questions. And so first, there's time for student questions. So if you have a question, please raise your hand. From students first. Okay, I don't see any raised hand at the moment. Then are there questions from also including non-students? And maybe I can just start with one. So I mean, just in the summary, you mentioned that you have a prescription to solve the zero mode ambiguity as a, like, in terms of using a time machine as a regulator. But couldn't, I mean, how unique is that? And couldn't you also, for example, use a mass of the scalar field as a regulator and then study the zero mode as a function of vanishing masses? And would you get the same zero mode? I mean, would you get the same singling out procedure, or how would that differ?
Do you mean like having the Einstein cylinder and the time machine?
Yes, so I mean, what you in the end want to study is a scalar field on the Einstein cylinder, and you use the time machine to define the zero state on the Einstein cylinder. But couldn't mm-hmm. you also put like a massive scalar field on the Einstein cylinder and then study the massless case as a limiting procedure of that massive scalar field?
Yeah,
for example?
As far as I know, I don't think that you get the affixing of the CMO in that case. But maybe this is there are other ways, because I think that the relevant part there is like the deformation of the identification, what is giving you this regularization. So I don't know if I could think of another kind of deformation or family that could give some other regularization, but it would be interesting to see. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So are there more questions or maybe continuations of previous discussions that we already had? Okay, this does not seem to be the case. So then maybe just another question. So, I mean, you were studying the 1+1 dimensional case, and I mean, I guess from a phenomenological point of view, one would like to go to like more, I mean, to a higher dimensional case. Is the generalization straightforward? I mean, that you just go to 1+3 dimensional or 3+1 dimensional case, or are there any subtleties that one has to?
The problem of it is like. It's like that all the conformal techniques that you have in this case, plus the simplicity of how you can define the topology and the transformations and everything, makes things computable. But in the moment that you start, you go for higher dimensions, I think it gets technically complicated very fast, exponentially fast, not in the case of having some conceptual subtlety, but in the case of dealing with the problem.
Okay, I see. But there's no like conceptual obstacle, you say? I mean.
No, in fact, I think it's more problematic in that sense, the 1+1 cases we were mentioning before, how is this Einstein cylinder and that's how you understand that as a wormhole or not. I think it's conceptually more tricky, this case.
But is it, I mean, how important is it that it is a wormhole or a time machine? Or, I mean,
No, it's not. For example, it's not important in the terms of the case of the CMO. That is the result and the regularization, but as in the sense that you want to study what happens with a wormhole and how it's transforming into a time machine and what does it mean, I think is a different thing.
Okay, thank you. And I guess I can ask once again whether there's any further questions for Anna. So at least I don't see a raised hand and also not a...
Oh, actually, can I ask a question, which is not related to what I was asking about? It's just that the thing is, I see a lot of kind of connection, relationship of this model with like stuff in condensed matter, like the Carroll boson on the boundary of a fractional quantum Hall system. So it's, you know, 1+1D and then 2+1D is the fractional Hall system. But regardless, like the quantum field theory is pretty much identical, like aside from the, from like, I guess where the periodicity comes from, like here it comes from a time machine and there it just comes from a lattice, right? So now, in the condensed matter kind of perspective, what you can compute, you know, you computed correlation functions and stuff like that, but you can also compute these out of time correlators. Like it's a commutator, but then you sort of the commutator between fields of different time, essentially. Yeah, so these are out of time commutators, and then you can compute their correlators, and then they sort of tell you I believe it's the fluctuation in the like sort of like the entanglement of your field, the fluctuation in your field. So that's something that you can compute, and there are results in the condensed matter literature that relates that fluctuation, that quantity, to light dissipation, right? Which is, you know, the power series and stuff like that. But here, the situation is different, right? Because here you have a time machine, which is, you know, by, and it's relativistic. I'm not sure how much the geometry is going to play a role here, but maybe there's some way to also compute something like that, right? The fluctuation dissipation theorem for time machines. I don't know, that sounds pretty crazy.
No, but thanks for the comment. And yeah, it's something that in fact came in some moment of discussion. So yeah, I think it's something I played around, but far away for the moment, that is only some idea, but yeah, it's a very good point. So yeah. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Since there don't seem to be further questions, let's all thank Anna again for the nice talk.